Brexit deal arrived, and with it has come fury and chaos.
Mr. Raab.
First, Theresa May's Brexit minister Dominic Raab, the man key to shepherding the new deal through, quit. A series of resignations quickly followed. More are being considered, along with a vote of no confidence, reportedly, that could remove May from power in an instant. The first test came on Wednesday, getting the draft deal through May's cabinet. She did manage that, but not without ministerial casualties, as we've seen since.
Impressively lifelike or just plain creepy? It's certainly hyper-realistic. Enough to catch the eye of facial recognition tech developers. Osamu Kitagawa's company create the masks, which wouldn't look out of place in a sci-fi movie, by transferring high-quality photographs onto 3D prototypes. The rest of the process is secret. And they're certainly in demand, from filmmakers to organizations in Saudi Arabia. One Japanese automobile company used a mask showing someone asleep to improve their vehicle's ability to detect when a driver dozes off at the wheel.
Apple is facing a new threat from mid-priced Chinese smartphones that are catching on all around the world. In the past few years, a new group of Chinese smartphone makers, specifically Xiaomi, Oppo, and Vivo, have risen up and started to take a bite out of that mid-level of the business. They're selling phones that cost somewhere in the vicinity of some of those older iPhone models and have very attractive specifications and designs that are tempting people to take a look.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Friday. It's November the 16th. It's 5:12 in the morning. Thanks for being here with us on our Friday edition of The Opening Bell. One more business day, and then we're at the weekend. We're happy you're here with us this morning. We've put together a pretty good broadcast for you, we think. Paul Nolte is here today, a financial planner, senior portfolio manager over at Kingsview. We're going to be talking about the economy and our portfolios. He'll be in our first segment, bringing him in just a few seconds, a little bit later in the program. Brian Summers will be here from Skift.com. There's news on the Lion Air investigation, investigating Chicago-based Boeing now, and we'll have the latest on that investigation. A lawsuit also filed yesterday in Chicago against Boeing by one of the family members of one of the 189 victims of the crash. Could be a problem with that Boeing 737 MAX aircraft. Brian will be here at about 5:40 this morning. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Futures pointing towards some weakness at the open on Wall Street later this morning. Dow futures are off about a third. NASDAQ and S&P futures off anywhere from a half a percent on S&P and about a percent on NASDAQ. As we look around the rest of the globe this morning, markets are generally mixed in Europe, with markets in London lower, in Germany higher, and in France lower. And in Asia, markets are generally higher as well. Oil is trading this morning at about $57.55 a barrel. A couple of headlines before we begin this morning. Oil prices on the increase. Investors bullishly anticipating production cuts by OPEC. International benchmark crude is up 57 cents a barrel. West Texas Intermediate crude up 40 cents. OPEC nations expected to start withholding supply soon to prevent a return to the kind of glut that we saw in 2014. American customers will save a little bit more on the total cost of Thanksgiving dinner this year. The American Farm Bureau Federation has conducted its 33rd annual survey of classic items comprising Thanksgiving dinner. Results found average cost of this year's feast at $48.90. or less than $5 per person. That's down about 22 cents from last year and at its lowest level since 2010. In addition to turkey, other foods showing up, the largest price cuts are sweet potatoes, green beans, and rolls. And let's begin this morning with Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Paul, good morning. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday to you, and happy early Thanksgiving.
Yeah, are you having turkey this year?
Absolutely. We've got turkey, we've got ham, we've got everything.
Nice.
And then some.
So what is the big news today? You know, in the opening montage there, there's Brexit is back again. And we were talking about this before we came on the air this morning. I'm not really sure what's going to happen there, but it doesn't feel like it's going to be something good.
Oh, no. With the resignations of part of Theresa May's cabinet and really not the population behind her deal at this point, I think that raises the possibility that she's no longer prime minister, which will throw a lot of that up for grabs. We saw a big reaction to the in the markets yesterday with the pound coming down 2%. A lot of the money center banks in Britain coming down 3-4% in their markets in turmoil. And I think the drop dead date for the a deal is May, June of next year. And without that, and without an extension, it really throws England into a chaotic situation.
You mentioned the pound and that impact yesterday in the markets. Is that where the impacts are going to be seen the most for investors here in the United States moving forward?
You generally will see these types of events show up a lot in the currency markets. I mean, when you take a look at currencies, the U.S. versus the euro or versus the pound or the yen, that's where you start to see the impacts of economic activity, who has the stronger economy or weaker economy. Part of the reason why the U.S. dollar has been as strong as it has been is the U.S. economy is doing generally better than most of the global economies. So our dollar is a little bit stronger. It creates some problems for a lot of our multinational companies who do a lot of business overseas and trade those earnings back into a much more expensive U.S. dollar. Makes it difficult for our trade as well. Makes it our goods more expensive going overseas. But that's a function of a good U.S. economy that the dollar tries to offset then as traders bid those dollars higher.
If I were a betting person, I'd say that there'd be another referendum here and that this Brexit thing never happens.
And that's been rumored around an awful lot. I think they were talking about that within about 24 hours after the initial vote because they were so surprised at what the results were. It was a big shock to many in Parliament as well as around the country that it was really more a vote not necessarily to leave the euro, but just a fed up with the current government mm-hmm. type of vote, not realizing what the impacts were. So it's going to be a situation that is going to be very interesting to watch unfold over the next 6 months or so.
Yeah, there was a recent poll there that said the majority of people would vote to stay in the European Union if the referendum were a do-over.
So. Because they now understand what the implications are and what really might happen, and they're like, this isn't such a good idea.
Well, back here in the United States, markets yesterday, we saw not a bad day, 208 points gain on the Dow. S&P was up 1%. NASDAQ was up almost 2%. We going to see the same thing happen today?
we're giving a little bit of that back here this morning. And that's been the MO for the market since the beginning of October, since the correction that we've started to see. The markets have been moving in both directions. In a very extreme volatile fashion. After the day after the elections, we were up 2%, 500 points on the Dow. We've seen days where we're down 300 points, and it doesn't look like there's any bottom. We wake up the next morning and the markets are rallying. So we've got a lot of, and it's really not the investors, it's the traders that are really moving things around here and trying to figure out, where are we going? Are we going into a recession? Is the economy still strong, getting better, getting worse, interest rates going higher, et cetera? And there's a lot of things going on that I think has got traders, at least, very concerned here. And part of the reason why you're seeing the volatility pick up dramatically, especially relative to last year's very low volatile environment.
We talked about the economy, our portfolios. And, Paul, you're concerned about some things. You're seeing some data points.
Yeah, we are. And, one of the things that we have talked about over time is the survey data and how investors or sentiment readings, how investors are feeling or how consumers are feeling, have generally been pretty good compared to the reality, the hard numbers. And we got retail sales yesterday, which was actually the headline number was very good. But that got moved around a little bit by auto sales and a little bit to a certain extent by gas sales as well. When you back out some of those things and you look at what they call core retail sales, that number was a little bit softer than it was anticipated. And when we look at some of the manufacturing data from some of the regional feds, that data is a little bit softer as well. And we've talked about housing and we've talked about auto sales in the past as generally being much weaker. Housing data has been poor for the last 6 months or so. As mortgage rates now have crested over 5%, it has taken a lot of people out of the housing market because they can't afford now what the new monthly payment's going to be for their mortgage.
Yeah, the housing data is the big one. People have just decided they're not going to do a house now.
Right, and that has a knock-on effect to a lot of sales. Once you move into a house, you got a whole mess of things you're buying: chairs, tables, fixtures, etc. And so that filters through to the economy. So when housing slows down, we see the knock-on impacts from other companies, other retailers. And certainly when we look at some of the retail sales data from specific retailers, JCPenney, et cetera, yesterday especially, they haven't been all that good. So, again, the consumers are feeling pretty confident. They like to see what their, they like to see their wages going up, and that's been very good, but they're not showing up in the stores.
What are consumers doing with their money? I saw a report this week that they're not saving it. Are they using the money to pay down credit cards, or what are they spending money on?
A little bit. They're using it to pay down. They're using it to pay down some debt. And what's interesting too is what the savings numbers do not capture is your 401k. So that's not counted as savings. So you have personal income and savings, but that 401k is not captured anywhere there. And that's actually where a lot of people have been salting away a lot of money. Mm-hmm. When you look at the three key entities in the United States and really around the world, government, industry, and consumers, in the United States, the consumers are actually the healthiest. They have paid down a fair amount of debt. They're in a very healthy position right now. On the other side of that, governments and industry are very debt-laden. They have picked up a lot of the debt over the last 10 years while the consumer has gotten very healthy. And that's really where our concern is in the markets as we look at some of these companies like a GE, some of the utility companies especially, that are very heavily indebted, have gone to the market and borrowed a lot of money to continue their operations. And if things start to go south a little bit, they're going to have trouble making payments. And part of the reason why GE bonds have sold off and why the stock now is trading well below $10 a share.
For those of you listening out there who have not are not regulars in the program, you probably don't know that Paul, in addition to being a radio broadcaster and a portfolio manager, he's also a professor. And you'll be out at York High School today talking to the kids about
careers.
This
is the intro to careers. So it's for their econ classes. And so there's going to be a group of us, probably about 10, 12 of us in various businesses, et cetera, talking to the students about what are their opportunities as they start looking to college and what do I want to be when I grow up. And one of the things that always comes out of these is your career path is never a straight line. I started out here and wound up completely different from what I thought I was going to do. And as you get into college and you find out in the first semester or two, this really isn't made for me. Now what do I do? It leads to some interesting career paths.
It's also interesting, too, because I'd be curious to see how the thoughts have changed among young people, what kinds of jobs they are looking forward to in 10 years or 15 years.
It's interesting when you talk. Well, some of them have a pretty good idea. I want to go engineering. I want to go into nursing. I want to do this or that. A lot of them have no idea. And it's always interesting talking. Certainly with my kids when they were growing up. What do you want to be? And talking to a 16-year-old about what do you want to do when you're 45. There's no real good concept to what that really means. They know kind of what they like in classes that they're good in, but that doesn't necessarily translate to ultimately a good career. I've talked to engineers who are now in marketing and are doing sales, and so it's an evolution. It's rarely what you wanted to do at 16 is what you're doing at 45 years old. And a lot of students feel that, if I'm not successful at whatever I go into college at, I'm a failure, and that's far, far away from the truth.
Yeah, but there are those kids that when it's career day and you inspire them, they become inspired. I was one of those kids.
And there's been a couple of them.
Yes.
So they've done a couple job shadows, and they've come downtown, and we've kind of taken them down to the Board of Trade, and we've talked to them about all the exciting stuff in the world of finance. And some of them have gone on to college and gone into finance, and They're now sophomores, juniors in college. So it'll be kind of interesting to see, in the next 5-6 years and see what happens with some of those students. But it's always a fun discussion, and I'll get an opportunity at least to go back in a couple months, and we'll go over more of the financial stuff, and we'll get a little deeper in with the econ club and the econ classes and in the world of finance and how to analyze stocks and the economy and so on.
We'll be off next Friday, so we won't see you then for Thanksgiving week. Lots to be thankful for this year?
Always. Family first, and certainly a successful year. Very grateful for my clients and my ability to continue to do what I would love to do.
Well, I know we say it every year, and it sounds hokey, but we're always thankful for you, Paul.
I appreciate that.
Appreciate
Thank you.
You coming in here, and have a good Thanksgiving to you and your family.
You do likewise. Thank
All
you.
Right. Paul, how can people get a hold of you if they want to?
They can always email me at pnolte@kingsviewam.com, and we can start that conversation.
All right. Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Have a great weekend.
Take care.
It is now 5:30 on the opening bell on 720 WGN.
Hi, this is Jim Dahlke, senior editor at Chicago Inno, with today's Inno Minute on WGN Radio. A rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know. Deloitte released its annual list of the fastest-growing tech companies in North America, and 7 Chicago companies cracked the list. The top Chicago company was Power Reviews, a software startup that seen 2,900% revenue growth from 2014 to 2017. And Google unveiled some new travel data ahead of the Thanksgiving holiday. By analyzing traffic and Google Map patterns, the search giant says that the best time to travel in Chicago over the holiday is actually Thanksgiving Day at 6 a.m. The worst time to travel is Wednesday at 3 p.m. That's today's Inno Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at chicagoinno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Friday edition of The Opening Bell. New developments in the investigation of the Lion Air crash in Indonesia involving the Boeing 737 MAX aircraft. Brian Summers is aviation business editor for skiff.com and is with us this morning via Skype from Los Angeles. Brian, let's begin with the 737 MAX investigation. Some new details. What has transpired since the last time we spoke?
Yeah, it's certainly been an interesting last couple of weeks, Steve. I didn't think this was going to be such a huge deal when this airplane crashed on October 29th, but it has turned into one. People may remember investigators have a basic idea of what they think happened. The airplane may have thought that it was in a stall, but it was not in a stall. There may have been a problem with this sensor called the angle of attack sensor. And this is a very updated new airplane from Boeing. It's only been around a couple of years. And the airplane had this system that basically pushed the nose down automatically to keep the airplane from stalling. The problem is that pilots at Lion Air, and it turns out at other airlines too, didn't even know that the airplane had this capability. So the Lion Air pilots apparently didn't know what to do. Lots of planes have automated systems. It's 2018. A lot of these systems are frankly meant to ensure that pilots don't make mistakes. There's this basic idea. Sometimes the airplane can be a little bit smarter than humans. American, Southwest, and United all fly these jets. They're familiar with a lot of automated systems. What is really weird, Steve, is that pilots from all three of these U.S. airlines say they didn't know anything about this new system installed on these Boeing 737 MAX jets. So recently, the pilot unions from a couple of those airlines came out and said, we didn't know the airplane that we fly can do this. And I think what's weirder is a couple of the airlines themselves have admitted, you know what? Boeing didn't tell us exactly how the system works. The reason we didn't put it in our manual is because we didn't know about it. So Boeing and the FAA have since tried to correct this. They've issued bulletins to pilots explaining to them what to do. And then earlier this week, United Airlines told its pilots what to do, and I did get a copy of that. Basically, United told pilots that this issue, quote, could cause the flight crew to have difficulty controlling the airplane and lead to excessive nose-down altitude, significant altitude loss, and possible impact with terrain. Possible impact with terrain, of course, is a nice way to say something that's actually a lot worse. I'm not a pilot, but my understanding is that a lot of well-trained pilots would have known what to do instinctively, even though they weren't trained on this system. But it's certainly a lot better that pilots know now the capability of their airplane. This whole system, it raises an interesting question, right? Why didn't pilots know? Why didn't the airlines know? And I think in that case, Boeing is going to have some explaining to do in the coming months. And it's possible they might change something about how this system works. We just don't know.
Brian, this is a relatively new 737 MAX aircraft. With your experience, is this something that happens with new aircraft generally? They have to work out the cobwebs, or is this sort of a unique experience?
Yeah, this next generation Boeing 737 MAX is about 2 years old. Of course, it's a much updated version of an airplane that people have been flying, I think, for about five decades. I'm not certain, but I think that the actual airplane that crashed was only a couple of months old. I know that United, American, and Delta are still taking deliveries of this new airplane. It sounds weird to talk about this when we're talking about a crash, but airlines tend to love this airplane. It's very fuel efficient. My understanding is that in the cabin, it's pretty quiet, and it's a major step forward technologically. The problem is it might have been too much of a step forward. And you're right, Steve. I mean, throughout history, you have had to work out the kinks of new aircraft. People may remember decades ago, crashes were much more common. Sometimes they were new aircraft. People were learning how to fly them, learning how they handled. It happens a lot less right now. I was certainly surprised by this Lion Air crash, but it still happens.
Brian, another story that you've written this week is about airlines auctioning premium seats. Is this something new? Is this a way for us to get a better upgrade?
Yeah, certainly this is a more fun story. I wrote a story about this company called PlusGrade that helps about 70 airlines worldwide auction off their business class, first class, and premium economy seats, often at the last minute. So, you'll go and you'll fly one of these airlines and you'll probably book on a coach ticket. It could be a very cheap ticket. You might get an email message from the airline. Hey, we're doing an auction. Do you want to bid to fly in business class or premium economy in first class? And you go on the website and you tell them how much money you'll bid for the better seat. And then you wait until about a couple of days before departure. And by that time, the airline knows, is there some corporate lawyer in Chicago that needs to go to London tomorrow and he's going to pay $8,000 for the ticket? Or is it time to unload these last premium seats at a discount? So the airline will go through the bids. Often they take the most expensive bid, but not always. And they'll reward, 2 to 10 people with what could be a discounted premium seat. I did this recently on a flight from Stockholm to Los Angeles. I was sitting in the economy cabin with my family. I had a feeling that the premium economy section was probably fairly empty because it was the middle of the summer. There weren't too many business people traveling. And so I bid a very low amount, and lo and behold, I won the auction. And the whole family was sitting in premium economy, so that was nice. One thing that I learned by talking to PlusGrade, though, is that I might have more trouble the next time I bid on a similar ticket, because basically no airline wants you to get too comfortable with the idea that you can always bid a low number and win every time. So even if you ordinarily would have won, even if you have a very strong, if you're on like a three-flight winning streak, they may make sure that you don't bid. So there's a little bit uncertainty next time because ideally, right, airlines want people to go to their website and buy the premium ticket in advance. They don't want to train people that you can get a discount in the last minute. But I do highly recommend using this. And if you're somebody like me that likes the thrill of a deal, it's a lot of fun to use.
Brian, it's Thanksgiving time. Any ideas about how busy it's going to be out there, and any advice for those of us who don't travel as much as you do?
Yeah, Steve, it's going to be a big year for travel, but I have to tell you, I just put the finishing touches on a family trip for next week that I'm very excited about. We're going to be braving Los Angeles International Airport at about 3 o'clock on a Wednesday. So Airlines for America, which is the trade group representing most of the big U.S. airlines, says there are going to be about 30.6 million passengers traveling through U.S. airports between November 16th and November 27th. They tell me this is a 5.7% increase over a year. But frankly, I think people forget about this sometimes. Airlines do most of their best business over the summer, and I don't think that Wednesday is going to feel all that much different than, say, a Friday or a Sunday at Chicago O'Hare, maybe around the July 4th weekend. I mean, there are just a ton of people that want to fly in the summer as well. The trade group says that Sunday is going to be the busiest travel day. That's not much of a surprise. Second busiest travel will be Wednesday, November 21st. And interestingly, the third biggest travel day is actually today. The trade group says that airlines are adding a lot of seats to accommodate passengers. And look, you know, we make this joke a lot. I'm a professional. I think it's going to be okay. For a lot of people that don't fly as much as I do, I understand why it could be a little bit difficult to be at the airline or be at the airport. The rules apply. You should probably be there early. You should probably be patient, and you should hope for really good weather.
All right, Brian, happy Thanksgiving. We'll talk to you next time.
Thank you, Steve. To you as well.
Brian Summers, aviation business editor for Skift.com.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures pointing toward a weak open on Wall Street later. The Dow futures up down about a third. NASDAQ futures off more than 1% this morning. S&P futures off more than 0.5%. Let's get the latest on agriculture and commodities now. And Orion Samuelson is with us. Orion, good morning.
Well, good morning to you. And it's interesting how soybean traders particularly are focusing on the meeting between the president of China and the president of the United States at the end of the month. Putting a lot of hope into that meeting, and the fact that they are hopeful that maybe the trade war that we've been dealing with will begin to move into the background. But as one analyst said, we've got plenty of everything as far as soybeans go, and that is going to weigh on us. And some analysts are doubtful the United States will be able to meet the USDA forecast for soybean exports to reach $1.9 billion bushels this year. Rich Feltes, who is vice president for research with R.J. O'Brien, said the larger issue is China seems to be learning how to get along without U.S. soybeans. But we did have a firm close yesterday on the soybean market at the Board of Trade. And livestock futures, lean hogs moved higher yesterday on technical buying and a good demand outlook for pork as well. But on the other hand, Steve, we continue to get reports of new African swine fever cases being found in China. And there's another report this morning that they have found another case, another outbreak of African swine fever there. The other thing I want to mention is Thanksgiving week next week, make your marketing plans accordingly because markets will be closed on Thanksgiving Day and will be closing early on Friday after Thanksgiving. They'll be closing at noon.
Orion, earlier in the broadcast we talked about every year for the last 33 years, the American Farm Bureau Federation puts out the cost of Thanksgiving dinner. Right. It is down this year, thanks in part to low turkey prices.
And a plentiful supply. And, of course, that always impacts the market for turkeys. But when you add it all together, it really is phenomenal because I don't know what you pay for going to a restaurant or a hotel for a Thanksgiving dinner, but that survey showed a little over $5 a person for the ingredients of a typical traditional Thanksgiving dinner. So American farmers continue to give reason to all of us to give thanks for their productivity.
Absolutely. The whole cost was, I think, $48.90 this year, so not bad. Do you have a turkey recipe that you like the most? What do you fry it? Do you, is it roasted? What do we do at the Samuelson House?
At the Samuelson House, we do it on the grill outdoors. We don't do the deep fat fry. We do it on the grill and have not for years. Always turns out well.
Lovely. Orion, have a great weekend. Thank you.
You too. Talk to you next week.
Orion Samuelson with us this morning. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Friday, November 16th. The industrial production report coming today. The Kansas City Fed Manufacturing Index, Charles Evans from Chicago Fed speaks today. We'll also get a report on Treasury Capital today. So just some things that could move the markets on this Friday, November the 16th.